Blog Talk Radio.
We're actually on for an hour. It is time for the Two Guys Soccer Show. I'm Mike, as always. I'm joined by Mr. Stead. Stead, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
All right, and we are brought to you once again by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland, Montgomery County in the D.C. area's best place for live sports and music. So, Stead, how you doing
this
week?
I'm doing okay. I'm battling, but I just have one thing to say to everybody out there in the neither world. If you can avoid it, please avoid a flu shot.
Yeah. I can't 100% agree with that one due to circumstances, but I feel your pain, my brother. I feel your pain, but hopefully this next hour will make you feel just a wee bit better, because I know it is my favorite hour of the week. We get to talk world football.
Let's talk, baby.
There is a ton to talk about. So, like we always do at this time, let's get it started with the good, the bad, and the ugly. As always, it keeps getting better, worse, and more anti-pretty. Give me your good for the week, Mr. Stead.
All right. Well, I have avoided it. I haven't said anything. I've been teasing it for about 3 weeks now, but I'm going to do it because it's over. My good for this week was Arsenal's unbeaten run and Arsenal's winning streak that they had. Their winning streak went 11 games, and they went and they're still unbeaten. They actually had a draw, but in those 11 games, after they lost their first two, they were sitting down in 17th place. And what I was happy about was I didn't see a lot of overly negative feelings. It was a new coach, a new system, a new way of thinking about Arsenal football. And then they went on and they beat every team they were supposed to beat. And that was one thing that, as an Arsenal supporter and as an observer, would notice that Arsenal was always good for letting teams that are low to mid table steal points from them and cause Arsenal to drop points, especially in a road game. And Arsenal just didn't seem to have the ability to play well when things were going well. Like whenever they had an opportunity to solidify a position or to move up a couple spots in the table, they would take an L. And I was really happy that Stoke was relegated, because all too often that L was at the hands of Stoke. So that unbeaten run was very healthy. It's very strong for the squad. It's really good for the turnover, because when you have a coach that was such an institution that Arsene Wenger was for so long at Arsenal, to move to a coach who has been proven on the European stage and was, even though he wasn't necessarily the most popular choice, he has come in, he has the players have bought into the system. They enjoy playing for him. Lacazette's playing the best he's played basically in his entire career. Aubameyang has creeped up. Now he's tied for the league lead in goals with 7 goals. And then Mesut Ozil is looking like he's on fire again. He's looking like he's enjoying playing. He's smiling. He looks like he's having fun, which I haven't seen from Mesut Ozil in quite a while. And the game against Leicester, especially the second half, was just beautiful. And they've really, really become a second-half team. They have not been up at halftime hardly at all in this run, and yet they've scored 25 goals in the second half of this run. So these are all really, really, really I'm speaking in all competitions, of course. I'm not talking about just Premier League, in all competitions. But this is really exciting to see. Really supplanted them as a legitimate contender for a Champions League spot. and you're looking at the table right now, and it's tight. I mean, it's really tight from eighth all the way up to number one. It's a tight race, and it's good to see that Arsenal was able to handle this change in coaching and this change in regime.
They've definitely been scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping the ball out of the back of the net has been a little bit tougher for them.
Very much so.
But I think Unai Emery has found out something that Arsene Wenger tried to and struggled with. If you score goals, you don't necessarily need to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that the defense was going to be a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Koscielny's best days are behind him.
Right.
Mustafi, we're never sure what to make of him.
Right.
You know, you've Petr Cech, kind of not at peak Petr Cech.
He's fighting some knocks, too. He's a little injured.
He's playing with some knocks. But when you have an attack that includes the likes of Mesut Ozil and Lacazette and Aubameyang, what you want to do is just run at people. And that's what I think they're doing. And I don't think their second half success is by mistake. I think that it is one of those things where they put so much pressure on you. It is hard to sustain that level of focus and defend like that for 45, 50, 60 minutes.
Right.
And that's where they get you. And that was what we saw most clearly from Manchester United last year when they were just scoring goals for fun in the last 10 minutes. And that is how you can be a very, very lethal Premier League team. Stay the course, play the game. And the one thing I like about Arsenal is that this team, unlike in the past, they don't panic. Jack Wilshere has found another gear. And I'm sorry, not Jack Wilshere. Aaron Ramsey has found another gear.
Yep.
Player that we thought that he was going to develop into in the center of the midfield. You know, you're getting contributions from your midfield, from your attacking midfielders, and especially from that front too, and Lacazette and Aubameyang. And let's call them what they are. I mean, I know he kind of ostensibly deploys Lacazette as a winger, but he's a second striker.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, their defense needs work. They still need a left back. They don't have one. I don't know what's wrong with Kolasinac. And you see, Mustafi has not really learned how to not go to his feet, or excuse me, go to ground whenever he feels pressure. And he just plays a very reckless style of defense, especially inside the box. And you look at this past weekend, you know, they did draw at Crystal Palace. And Crystal Palace, first of all, that is a very difficult place to play. And even though Crystal Palace struggles with scoring goals at home, I was watching that game through my computer, and you could still hear how loud those fans are at that stadium. That is not an easy place to go. And Arsenal looked tired, and they looked like they just needed a break. They've really put in a lot of pressure on other teams. They've been playing really hard to maintain this run. And you saw, whenever a manager makes all three of their subs, by the 75th minute of the game, all three of the subs were already gone. That lets you know the team's feeling pretty fatigued. So the fact that they got out of there with a point, even though they were up, I can say Arsenal's goals that they had, they were outshot, I believe, 17-6. So, you know, they were definitely tired. So throwing a little bit of love with Crystal Palace's way, they got a well-deserved point out of that game. But, yes. Arsenal still, though, you see them trending in the right direction. I really hope they work out the contract situation with Aaron Ramsey, because if they don't, the other teams that are of the big six now of the Premier League are going to scoop him up very, very, very quickly.
And he can negotiate with anybody come January.
Yeah. Yes,
I do have confidence that he will after this season. But it's about to get a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
You got Liverpool coming up Saturday.
Yep.
You got Uncle Nuno coming in.
Yeah. Uncle Nuno's sitting in seventh place. Or excuse me, in tenth place. In tenth place with Uncle Nuno.
Yep, Uncle Nuno's coming back. Wonder what he's going to bring to the party.
Yeah.
And then we've talked about him. We've mentioned him. You love him. Bournemouth.
Yeah.
It's about to get a little bit tricky.
Yep,
over the next month.
Yeah.
And we're going to see what this run has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think four or six points out of this is a good run.
Yeah.
But we see, are they a contender, or are they a team that's going to be scrapping?
Mm-hmm.
And I, this next couple of weeks will tell you a lot. But you're right. They did. They went 11. They beat the teams that they were supposed to beat. They did so, for the most part, fairly comfortably. It's clicking.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it, but when you're attacking, I'm really thinking that this Arsenal-Liverpool game on Saturday, the late kickoff, 1:30, because of the time change, is going to be a long one to watch, and clearly that's the big game in the Premier League. But full credit to Arsenal, I don't often say that, but full credit to Arsenal as this run comes to an end. So I want to take things across the channel. Talk about the golden boy himself. Kylian Mbappe came on as the second half sub this week and got his 10th goal, making him the first player in Europe's top five leagues to reach 10 goals for the season. In the league, PSG is just absolutely romping. They're the only team that's 11 from 11 with wins. They're 8 clear in Ligue 1.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't help them in the Champions League, where they're sitting in third behind both Napoli and Liverpool.
Right.
But 11 from 11 to start any league campaign is good. And Kylian Mbappe with 11, Neymar chipping in with 8, they're scoring goals for fun.
Right.
It always brings up the question of, does La Ligue 1 prepare PSG to play in the Champions League? I think clearly this year you see that they're struggling there.
Right.
But they're going to romp Ligue 1, and it's going to be really interesting to see how many goals this boy scores, because, man, if he hasn't had a good 4 months.
Yeah.
At the World Cup, leading Ligue 1 in scoring, he's just putting them on for fun right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, to have his life at the years.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen somebody who's making more money in millions than their age, because I believe he made 20 million euros last year. So... at only 19. That just doesn't happen. But, hey, he's earning his money. I mean, he's we're talking about him. He's going to receive the torch from Messi and Ronaldo as the best player in the world. And I don't think he's going to have a rival, unlike those two who have kind of gone back and forth with the major awards that are handed out from the writers and from FIFA. It looks like it's going to be the Mbappe show for quite a while here.
I think the biggest question with him is, how long does he stay at PSG?
Yeah.
He is French. It is Paris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no real need to move.
Right.
But how long does he stay there? And then where does he go from there?
Right.
You know, certainly you have to think Spain.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a bit of a coup? He ended up going to Barcelona. And they took him back over as a replacement for Neymar, who was supposed to be the replacement for Messi, but then left to PSG,
mm-hmm.
who he had supplanted probably as PSG's most potent attacking threat.
Yes. And their most marketable player. He's taking over that role, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that that doesn't sit well with one Neymar Jr.
No.
But... just a really good couple of months and a really good start to the season
mm-hmm.
for Mr. Mbappe, who
mm-hmm.
has – and, you know, it's hard. You see these players. They come up at 18, 19 years old, and they're the next big thing. We've talked about Renato Sanchez on the program, who won the Golden Boy at Europe. And his team got the big money move to Bayern. And
mm-hmm.
just now has started to figure it out. For Bayern and become more of a consistent player. You know, the disastrous first season, an awful loan spell with Swansea,
mm-hmm.
and just now kind of started to get back into it, and we're seeing him start to deliver on some of that promise.
Right.
You know, you can make the argument that Wayne Rooney, despite all of his success, despite being Manchester United's leading goal scorer, never really fulfilled that role that his talent, his early promise showed. It's rare when you get the likes of a Messi or even a Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right. But you could even say with Messi, but even with Messi and with, I mean, I think Messi's unfairly gets this label, but you look at Messi and Rooney too, did they really deliver on the international stage as well when they play in the big, you know, Messi never won a major tournament. Rooney, I don't even, he's never even reached a semifinal of a major tournament. So, yeah, you could, I totally agree with you when it comes to the, to reaching your potential and to see what Mbappe is doing, where can he sustain it? But a lot of the goals that, that have been set for him, he's essentially already achieved. I think he just needs a Champions League, and he's kind of, he's hit everything.
You know, a Champions League, and then he can just sit back and start counting his FIFA Players of the Year. Because we know they're coming. And they may be coming sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would not be at all surprised, you know, if after this season, it wouldn't shock me if you see him at the end of this season, a recipient of both the Golden Boy and the Ballon d'Or for best player.
Wouldn't surprise me either.
Best young player and best player in the world, because he really has emerged as probably one of, if not the best player at the moment right now. You know, Ronaldo is still lethal, but his powers have started to wane a little bit. It's the likes of Mbappe. You got to give credit to Luis Suarez. You know, goal scorers are always going to get it, and right now he's doing just that. I think they need a decent Champions League run to solidify it with all the talent they've got, but I'm just not sure that that team is battle-tested enough to go beyond the last 16 quarterfinal range. I just don't think they play enough to see it tested properly.
Yeah, I get the sense that Ligue 1 is kind of the direct opposite of what we were talking about with the Premier League, where the Premier League teams are just beating up on each other all season long. And it's very difficult for them to sustain a really solid Premier League run and also maintain the Champions League and maintain European places. And you can look at the French League and seeing is that almost the direct opposite, where they don't have enough power. And because of that, the teams are not quite ready for that step up in competition. And the French teams have done well in the past. I mean, Lille's made good runs. Marseille's made good runs in Champions League football and as well as in Europa League. But those teams are not they're not producing at the level that they once were even 5 years ago. So it's very difficult for me. I mean, I've said this week after week. I will not buy into PSG in a Champions League situation until they actually prove to me that they can do it.
I'm looking at it, and there are only really two other teams that I think are anywhere above replacement in another league, and that would be Lyon and Marseille. I would normally say that about Monaco, but they're sitting down in 19th.
Right.
You know, most of their players from that run that they made 2 years ago are gone. That is not the Monaco team of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago when they in the position to challenge PSG, challenging them and beating them.
Right.
You know, I would figure that PSG could walk in and beat a Montpellier or a Saint-Étienne or a Bordeaux or even Nice on any given day just based on the talent that they put on the field. The hardest thing that they need to do is maintain their talent and not trip over anything on the way to doing it.
Right.
You know, it would not surprise me at all this season if PSG do a French double and remain undefeated through the league season.
They're big
Champions League. And right now, they're sitting in third, down to both Liverpool and
Napoli.
And two teams that have gotten. And it's not going to be easy for them to get out of that hole.
Right.
And just like it wouldn't shock me if they go undefeated through the league season because they've just got that kind of talent, it wouldn't also it would not shock me a bit if they tripped out of the Champions League at the first hurdle this year. I think that would be an embarrassment and a big problem for everybody involved in that.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And it's not like Thomas Tuchel has had a ton of Champions League success in his past.
No. No. Yep. And with you're looking at to what's coming up and I mean they get a nice little break from Champions League this week, which I know the teams are probably going to appreciate. But they're in the group of death in Champions League. So and the Napoli chief was pretty upset at the draw because Liverpool was placed in pot three But it looks like they, you know, if they hold course and they maintain, then it's going to be PSG, you know, on the outside looking in. They're next thing they're going to be competing in Europa League, and they're not going to be happy about it. Which, and you, we've seen teams from Champions League who then get sent over to Europa League because they crash out in the group stage. We've seen one or two things happen. They usually either final and probably win, or they crash out in the very, very next round where they're in Europa League. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what route they take.
Like you said, I mean, in the Champions League, they have to still go to Napoli, which is not going to be easy.
No.
You've got Liverpool at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see Liverpool playing for a draw, which would suit them just fine.
Right.
And then they've got Red Star Belgrade on the last day.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that benefits them about that is that that means that PSG and Liverpool are playing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they've got to get the points. They have to go in, and they have to win.
Right. And Liverpool's proven they play quite well on the road in Champions League.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's a team that's going to be intimidated by going into the Parc des Princes
and
playing PSG. Like, those lights aren't going to get them, all right? And they are just as potent on the attack. They may not have the names, but on their day, that troika of Mane, Salah, and Firmino is just as lethal as anybody else in Europe.
Anybody else in Europe. You got that right. You got that right.
So, that was good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the bad for the week.
Let's talk about the bad.
Well, we'll get to that. That's the ugly. So talk about the bad.
Let's see. You know, we can always talk about with bad. You know, we can always talk about. So we can always talk about Real Madrid. But
that's ugly.
That's. I think right now that's gone from bad to ugly. You know, I actually really really enjoyed this weekend in soccer. The MLS Championship Sunday was great. There were really some Premier League games that happened. So, you know, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I don't really have a bad this week. I was going to call out Jack Wilshere, but I think I'm going to wait and give him a chance to turn it around because though he's on West Ham, he's still an Arsenal boy. And I just wish if somebody ever taught him how to run properly, maybe he wouldn't be as injured. But I think I'm going to punt my bad for the week, and I'm going to punt it over to you and see what your bad is for the week.
My bad is LA Galaxy on I don't know what you want to call it, determination.
I guess it's not Championship Sunday, yeah. I guess that was the wrong term for it, yeah.
Determination, playoff, whatever, Sunday,
yeah.
27th minute, 1-0 up. 30th minute, 2-0 up. Halftime, 2-0 up. 57th minute, 2-1. 73rd minute, 2-2. 79th minute, down 3-2. A Houston Dynamo team that had little or nothing to play for and had been playing with little or nothing all year.
Mm-hmm.
And they crashed out of the playoffs. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, isolated, one shot on goal the whole entire match, one quality attempt, and the forlorn figure he cut as everybody walked off the field and he sat on the bench, realizing that his season, and possibly his MLS career, I had expected, as a lot of people did, a lot more out of the Galaxy. And they did not deliver. And that is my bad for the week.
Yeah, that team has spent too much money and they have too much firepower to go out this way. Even from an observer of LA Galaxy from across the pond and from and someone who just recently is just starting to feel like I'm starting to give MLS its due. But I had brought up LA Galaxy a few times the past couple of weeks just about how they were right there. And all they needed to do, really, was hold course, win. They didn't even need to win all their games. They needed to win, like, two of three.
And the fact that they go out, really, they've been in seventh place for like 4 or 5 weeks. They're sitting in seventh place. So everything was laid out for them, and they still couldn't get it done. And if you see, a win would have put them in sixth place, would have knocked Real Salt Lake out, and they would have been in, and they would have been able to actually give themselves a real opportunity to make a real run in the Western Conference. Like it or not, doesn't matter who you are as a defender, you don't want to play against Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You just don't. You just don't. The guy is an on-field menace. He's a bully, and he can score in so many different ways. And I've never seen a guy on the field have the ball as infrequently as he does to be as productive as he is. So it's a shame that they went out this way. He's up there. I think he's 36 now, but he's proven he's still got plenty of firepower in the tank. And, you know, Ryan Giggs played when he was 40 and had a great role coming off the bench as a super sub. And European teams were not keen on him going over to coming to the United States in the first place. So that could, yeah, you're right. This could be the end of Zlatan's run.
I think the fact that he was able to do what he did, when you really look at what there is on Galaxy, there's not much.
No.
Talk about Wayne Rooney elevating the players around him. Zlatan did more with less service. He's a guy, the rare striker who can create opportunities where there just aren't any, and where an average human being just would not be able to get one off.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the success that they had came down to Ibrahimovic.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that you saw in this game was when they could not get the ball to him, when he could not create, when he only had one opportunity, there just wasn't anything there.
Mm-hmm.
And Zlatan can't play center back. He can't.
No, he can't.
He can't keep penalty kicks out. There is a limit to what he can do. He won't tell you that, but there is. And I look at him and I say, this is a guy who had a great season. Yes, he didn't, but I don't think that he necessarily got the service or had the caliber of players around him that a DC United did.
Right.
And this is a larger problem at LA Galaxy in terms of recruitment and the direction that they've headed in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the over-reliance on aging European superstars, you know, you can't keep counting on the likes of Ashley Cole and Zlatan
Ibrahimovic,
Steve Gerrard to recreate the magic of Beckham and Landon Donovan. It's just not going to
happen. Mm-hmm.
And so they need to take a hard look at where they are and what they are, because this is two consecutive seasons where they've missed the playoffs. Last season, not good at all. This season, yeah, you got a boost from having Zlatan on your team, but until he got there, until he started playing, you were a below average team.
Mm-hmm.
And in one game, you know, at least you look at DC United and you say there was talent there before we turned to cherry on them. You were asking Zlatan to basically be your team. So my speak is bad on Zlatan or bad on LA Galaxy as a whole, as a collective, for allowing this. So before we move on to the ugly, and there is some stuff, and we actually have a unique category of just undefinable ugliness that we got to talk about. I want to give a shout out again to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, who keeps us on the air every week. We'll be down there this week. There's some good Premier League games, starting with Manchester United at 8:30 on Saturday. Come down, watch the aforementioned Arsenal-Liverpool game. And believe me, there will be some characters there for that one.
Absolutely.
And I may have to make a special trip in for that one, because that one just looks like it's going to be a great time. If soccer and football aren't your thing, they got some really great bands coming in at Friday and Saturday evening. So go on down, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, Bethesda's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. Let's get on, as we always do, and close this segment of the show out with the ugly. Now, number one, I don't even want to call it ugly because it's not ugly in the sense that we typically use the word ugly, but this is certainly, like, I guess, horrific. And we have to talk about owner of Leicester City, Srivanathan Prabra, who died in a car crash right after their draw. Just a horrific loss for the club. All the reports were that he was a beloved owner. Who guided them to the pinnacle. I mean, I don't think anybody, when they came back to the Premier League after he took over them, bought them for £39 million. They
are now
£436 million.
Wow.
And winning the Premier League in 2016, the run in the Champions League in 2017, just overseeing the renaissance for Leicester City. And I know that they have not been at that peak recently. You know, players, they don't have the money to compete with the big boys on a consistent basis. But nobody will ever be able to take that 2016 season. And when you talk to people in England, that was just the most spectacular thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
And getting up there and winning it. The 5,000-1 long shots.
I will say, until I see something better, that was the most amazing season I have ever seen. From a start to finish. They tried to make comparisons with other miracle runs in sports that have occurred from various Olympics or playoff runs or something like that. But this was a season-long run where they lost 3 games all year, and they were winning close, tight games around very solid team play and good defense, strong goalkeeping, and a striker that knew how to put him in when he needed to put him in. And from what you're hearing about this owner, too, he was really beloved and embraced by that city. And in Leicester, the town is mourning the loss of this. I heard reports even that said that he was like a father figure for the city. He brought in, he did a lot of charity work, and he did a lot of outreach programs. And he's really, as you cited, the growth of the club from a financial perspective, and also, but their fan base has grown tremendously. But also, they could be turning into the new kind of Aston Villa team since they've gone down. Who are those teams that, you know, maybe aren't going to be competing for Champions League spots, but maybe competing for spots in Europe consistently, like Everton is every year, like Villa used to be every year, to just a team that, you know, may have a scare every now and then, but could have a really solid 12 to 15, maybe 20-year Premier League run at the top. And that's all because of this ownership group and what they've come in and what they were able to do. And I recorded that final game, and I really wanted to watch them and watch them win, not only when they won it, but also when the season was over and the players were all walking around. And you're looking at now one of the best players in the world really was exposed on that team with N'Golo Kanté. So so it's a really, really sad day in the football world.
I think I liken it to the 92 Phils, who went to the World Series and lost to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the right collection of talent that just came together, and their collective souls decided to occupy a certain space at a certain time. And I don't think that you can recreate that very, very easily, and they've proven that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing is, you can't possibly take it away.
No.
It's there. It's in the history books. We will be talking about this in 10, 15, 20 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Say, who's the next Leicester City?
Right.
And the story will be told about this collection of individuals who happened to come together at that point in time so effectively. And it was a team that was greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm. And you can't see that now. Go ahead,
you see that now with, like, Riyad Mahrez putting in the goals for Manchester City, and N'Golo Kanté's rise to probably be the best player at his position. He may be better than anybody at his position than anybody else in sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That they were able to get those people, that they were able to identify that talent, that mm-hmm. they were able to get those games out of Jamie Vardy, who was playing basically semi-pro a couple
yeah.
of years ago.
Yep.
You know, Wes Morgan, who was an also-ran.
Mm-hmm.
How they – Danny Drinkwater.
Yep.
The collection of players that they used to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And full credit to them, and this is a tremendous loss, not only for Leicester City, but
yeah.
the world.
Yeah. And one more thing I'm just going to say about that run, too, what was great, was that even that Champions League run they had the following year to the quarterfinals showed you that that exactly what you're saying. That was a team greater than the sum of its parts because they lost their best player and still had solid European performance, and they were a tough out, and nobody wanted to play them. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun to watch.
So I'm going to switch back to the other ugly.
Okay.
And introduce this one with a question. Who do you believe are the best managers available in world football right now?
Oh, man. Arsene Wenger. I mean, as far as a guy available, he's what? He's probably 67, 68. And
I think 69.
Yeah, he's... He's up there, but he can still – he didn't want to leave Arsenal at that point, but he also knew that he should have left earlier than he did when he was when he finally decided to make the jump. He said, you know, I probably should have left a few years earlier, and he was right. But you're looking at a team like Real Madrid and or another big club looking for a coach, and who can come in – at early in the season and command instant respect. He can.
Well,
so,
I asked this question.
And maybe Antonio Conte.
Yeah. I asked this question because Real Madrid is looking for a new manager because they went down in flames 5-1 to Barcelona
mm-hmm.
in El Clasico this weekend. And it wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm.
No Messi. 5-1, Luis Suarez with the hat trick.
Hat trick.
And it was curtains for Julian Lopetegui,
mm-hmm.
who, as good a couple of 4 months as Kylian Mbappe had, this man has had the ugliest 4 months. He
yeah.
leads with a 6-4-6 record. And a 42.86 winning percentage, one of the lowest in the history of Real Madrid for anybody who's managed over 10 matches.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. June 12th, 2018, announces his dream job, taking over Real Madrid. Kind of a surprise hiring when I look back at it. I didn't think that that was the direction that they were going to head in, but that's where they went. June 13th, gets fired the day before the start of the World Cup. This should have let you know that this was not going to end well.
Right.
August 15th, loses his first match, 4-2 to Atletico Madrid in the UEFA Super Cup. He won his first La Liga matches. They scored 10 goals and only conceded 2 against Getafe, Girona, and Leganes.
Mm-hmm.
September 19th, 3-0 defeat of Roma. To open up the Champions League campaign. Everything
mm-hmm.
was going to plan. Then, 7 days later, the wheels start coming off. September 16th, Lourdes is 3-0 to Sevilla. Next 4 games, they score 0 goals. A game in La Liga since the 22nd of September. 0-1-4 was 2 goals. In fact, 3 of their
mm-hmm.
last goals have been scored by Marcelo.
Yeah. The right back.
Yeah. He's your second leading scorer right now. It's bad.
Yeah.
And then they tried to hire Antonio Conte, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen
mm-mm.
because contract negotiations, the feeling in the camp that certain players were not going to welcome him and that it may inhibit them from recruiting players that they wanted,
mm-hmm.
mainly guys from Chelsea who just don't want to play for him.
Right. You're
and
not going to get even Hazard with Antonio Conte there.
they may not even be able to keep Thibaut Courtois with mm-hmm. Antonio Conte there.
Right.
But Lopetegui has to go. So Santiago Solari, who many people may know from his coverage on ESPN mm-hmm. during the 2014 World Cup, takes over. He's a former manager of their B team, Real Madrid Castilla.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a provisional manager, he can only be in charge for 2 weeks under Spanish law. So they have 2 weeks to find a new manager. Mm-hmm. During that time, he's got a pretty favorable run. They've got Mea in the Copa del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, Mea isn't actually even in Spain. It's actually located in Morocco. So, yeah, I don't think they've got much for him. Valladolid, Victoria Pilsen, and Celta de Vigo before the international break, at which time they either have to make a decision to keep Santi Solari or hire a new coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I asked you the question, who's the best manager available? If I looked on Transfer Market, and they had them by wins and quality wins, and so mm-hmm. kind of an objective thing. Zinedine Zidane, so we know he's not going back there.
No.
Antonio Conte, tried and failed.
Mm-hmm.
Leonardo Jardim, pretty good manager. Flamed out late with Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
So, Arsene Wenger, 69. Got to give him some consideration, but who knows what appetite he has.
Right.
And it gets Peter Bosch. Last managed in December of 2017. He took over Ajax and led them in 16-17 to the UEFA Cup final where they lost to Manchester United.
Yeah.
His time with Borussia Dortmund, not good. Laurent Blanc, the former PSG and French manager.
French manager, but
since 2016, the pickings are slim for
They also have Guti, their the youth coach, who's you know my age, but you know he's a Real Madrid man through and through. So he's also you know probably blowing in the wind.
Yeah, but I don't think that you would.
They're not going to do that though. No, they're not going to hire
after
Guti.
Passing over him for Solari. If they were going to hire one of them, they would have done it already.
Right.
The pickings are slim. The chances of you getting Mauricio Pochettino to leave after having signed a multi-year contract and having to negotiate that buyout with Daniel Levy in the middle of the season in 2 weeks.
Right.
I'm going to put that with the same odds as Leicester City winning the Premier League in 2016. Is a chance that you could get Jose Mourinho to go? I mean, it seems like it would be a good move for both parties and a respectable bow out that that would save face for both him and Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think that one's got to be paid attention to. But he hasn't necessarily expressed a desire to go back there. And don't forget, that didn't actually end
That didn't end well. No. No.
So, but then again, outside possibly of his time with Inter and Porto, I don't think any of his relationships have ended up that way.
They've ended well. No, absolutely not.
You got to look at that. And so Real Madrid, in a bit of bother right now.
Yeah, they're in a bit of a bind. Absolutely. They're in a bit of a bind. I think that Real Madrid you look at the standings, they're still not technically out of it. They're one good run from easily climbing back into a top four position. You look at fourth place with Atletico Madrid. It's only 5 points away. That's two games, and a couple of teams can drop some points, and you're right back in it. The La Liga race, surprisingly, is tighter than the Premier League race, which hasn't been true in quite a long time. But so you'll see Real Madrid, it's still early. You know, we're only about 25% into the season. But, again, when you're doing manager shuffles at this time, unless you can catch lightning in a bottle like they did with Zidane, it's going to be a tough go. It's definitely going to be a tough go. But it's going to be exciting to see, and it's going to give us a lot of fodder to talk about for the rest of this season if we don't have enough already.
I mean, I would be amazed if they were able to capture that twice. First with Sidon, and then again with Safari.
Yeah.
That just doesn't typically
happen. Doesn't happen, no.
So before we get on to previewing some of these knockout round games, you want to give us your ugly real quick if you have one?
I'll give you my ugly to close out the show. That'll be my parting shot. So let's go ahead and jump into these knockout games we got coming up.
Oh, so it's playoff time. It's something we do here that nobody else does. The 6-week odyssey that is the MLS playoffs. Just when you thought they were done, they pull you back in.
Mm-hmm.
7 p.m. tomorrow, we kick off with Philadelphia Union visiting New York City FC.
Yes, and the game is on television. I can watch it.
Yes. Followed by Portland Timbers at FC Dallas. Thursday, this one I know you'll be watching.
Yes.
Columbus comes down to Audi Field and takes on the Rooney Uniteds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can call them that all you want. I like it. Yep.
Before, Real Salt Lake plays LAFC.
Mm-hmm.
So let me get this one off because I know what your answer is going to be already. But which one are you most excited about watching?
I'm excited to watch the DC Columbus game. Columbus is, they took a bit of a dip. They took a little fall, but they have a lot of excitement going on in the town right now. Cause we were discussing their move and the new stadium issues that they've had and how that is one of the original teams. They really should stay where they are. So of course, whenever you have something like that can galvanize a fan base, that can galvanize a team, that makes a team dangerous. But they're playing against the hottest team in the MLS right now. And they're playing them at home, where they're even hotter. So DC ended the season with a bit of a boring game where they basically played a lot of defense and they sat back. And it's almost like they just were playing. They're basically playing not to lose. And luckily for them, the teams that were ahead of them faltered a bit. And DC was able to vault all the way up into fourth place. But I am also very excited for the Philadelphia NYCFC game. And as you pointed out, very much so, that NYC has been struggling over the last about 6-7 weeks of the season. And Philly was playing really, really well. Of course, they had a couple of faults on the way they closed out their season. But when you look at their last month, they actually were playing really, really good soccer overall. You know, they had the slip in the U.S. In the U.S. Cup final. But overall, they've a solid team later in the season. So we could still see Philly dominate NYCFC on the road and get a win. That game is wide open. So I feel like Atlanta and New York really don't have an idea who they're going to play next. So they're going to have to really pay close attention to these games. And especially Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta, you had all that high potent offense, and then you didn't close it out, and you ended up finishing second, and you finished 2 points behind Red Bulls. So it's the Eastern Conference is wide open, and I mean, I think anyone can beat anybody.
I like this matchup for DC United, and I think DC United at the four spot has everything set up for them really throw a spanner in the works of the MLS playoffs. They've got this game at home, and you don't want to come down here and play them because Audi Field has become a fortress over this season. I would actually think they're favorites, and rightly so, they are the fourth team over Columbus. I think Rooney at home, I think them at home, they're comfortable, they're a completely different team. You did not see them as adventurous on Sunday as you have seen them in their past games, especially at home. They did not attack as much. They did not play with the same flair, the same speed that you see them play when they're at Audi Field. I think that Ben Olsen will have them set up to play that sort of game. And look, this is not a team that they were in the playoffs 2 years ago. You're led by a guy who knows what it's like to play in big games. let's not forget, this man, Wayne Rooney, has won a Champions League.
Yes.
And two other finals. He knows to win a one-off game. He doesn't have that team there.
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, if they get by and they do have to play Atlanta, we'll say Atlanta or New York. It's a home-and-home series.
Right.
They're guaranteed one game. All they need to do is not go and lose on the road. Which proved on Sunday that they could do. And just win your home game.
Yeah.
I think that came up well moving forward. You know, you talked about being in NYCFC, and NYCFC has been inconsistent since the departure of Patrick Vieira.
But
they also play in that bandbox that is Yankee Field.
Right.
And that is tough. How does Jim Curtin adjust his team when he knows that he can't play with any width? Fortunately, you have players like Bort Dorchow for the Philadelphia Union and Ali Bedoya who play more centrally and are capable of playing up the middle. But that lack of space is going to negate the effects that C.J. Sapong can have on that game. And can that young Philadelphia defense hold up?
Yeah. Now,
Andre Blake may be one of the best keepers in CONCACAF, full stop. But he's got to have guys playing in front of him, and that is the youngest from back four in MLS.
Yeah. And
that's going to be nip and tuck, I think. I can see it going a lot of ways.
I agree. And you look at two, but they just played them, lost 3-1. So, but again, you know, it's difficult to beat a team two times in a row in any sport, you know. And Austin Trusty, another own goal in the most recent game. But again, that happens when you're a central defender and you're tracking back. It's possible. The ball takes a ricochet, goes into the goal. But you're looking at this going, they now know who the team they're playing is. And I think they probably took their best shot. And Philly can turn it around and come back again. I mean, Philly still won 15 games this year. So it's
the season that they've ever had in franchise history.
Yeah. So, yes, but you can go on the road to New York and play in that box because that team needs a stadium really bad. You got to stop playing there. And I'm pulling for them as well. I'm pulling for them because I just like seeing young teams who really are getting kind of pushed around to come back and say, actually, no, we're here to play and we're gonna you know, put a boot in your face. So we'll see. That's gonna be a good game to watch, definitely.
That would be a victory for MLS's version of Moneyball, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Absolutely.
NYCFC owned by the Yankees and Manchester City versus Philadelphia Union, who are one of the lower revenue clubs, not lower market, definitely lower revenue.
Lower revenue,
Before we move out, I do want to take at least a cursory glance at the Western Conference, although I do feel that the Western Conference is a bit more straightforward.
Right.
You know, Portland-Dallas probably the more interesting of the two games.
Right.
Insofar as Dallas was dominating early in the season, but then lost their last three to close it out, and you want to talk about backing into the playoffs, going into the Wednesday matchup against a Portland team that maybe not as formidable as they were a couple of years ago when they made the run to the MLS Cup, still has talent, and it's
capable.
You know, how Oscar Perea prepares his team, how he gets them back after the last month of the season and gets them prepared and ready to go in, it's going to tell you a lot about how this team is. Remember, this team, and I'm speaking about Dallas, who trailed off this season, who trailed off last season. Where are they? What are they? Who are they? And when are they going to put their foot down and say, no, we have the better talent?
Right.
I think if Dallas plays to their full capabilities, I don't see Portland getting by them, but based on how Dallas has been playing the last month of the season, I think that could easily be a victory for Portland.
Yeah.
LAFC, kind of hard done losing out on that second spot, but they had it in their hands and they lost.
Right.
And got passed by just about the second hottest team in MLS, in Seattle.
With Seattle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Real Salt Lake has had a week off. But you're also talking about an 8-point difference between the two teams.
Right.
And LAFC has had the most successful season in terms of points for a expansion club.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the likes of Carlos Vela. They've got Bob Bradley. This is a team and a coach who knows how to play in MLS. I don't see them repeating the faults of Atlanta last year, where, you know, you had a lot of guys on Atlanta who had never been part of this. Bob Bradley knows how this works. I suspect Bob Bradley's going to have his team set up and that they're going to be ready to come out and play. And I think that they're going to move on to play Seattle in a home.
And Real Salt Lake's been relatively inconsistent to end the season. I mean, I believe they won their 33rd game 3-0 to turn around and lose their 34th game 3-0. So,
but that's as young as there is an MLS, they are playing more youth players than anybody else.
Right.
That's a team that's going into that is a team more than anybody else who's going into a situation that they're just not familiar with.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting see how well prepared they are. Plus, they're going on the road. It's not like this game is in Salt Lake.
Right.
So they're
clearly built, and they're clearly setting themselves up to have a nice run, a multiple-year run in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as we depart this podcast coil for this week, any parting words of wisdom?
My word is the wisdom are also going to be my ugly for the week, and that is to the Tottenham Hotspur. Y'all need to get your field situation worked out. That was an appalling game you all had to play by sharing the Wembley Stadium to play a game one day after you had, I believe it was Philly versus the Jaguars, an NFL game out there, and they just beat that field to snot. And of course, it's a football team that happens, but when you're playing in a very moist environment the way England can be most of the year, it just has me wondering, Spurs, what are you going to do? Because your new stadium is on delay, and I believe you're contractually obligated to play 4 games a year in that stadium. So I really hope you work this out, and you're not going to have the worst pitch in the league when you have a brand new stadium. That's all I'm saying. Spurs, good luck to you. Work out your field.
No, they already did work that out. That's what happens when you play 3 consecutive NFL games on a field that is notoriously bad.
Yep.
The engineering of Wembley is not set up to keep the field conditions good.
No.
Just the high banks of the stadium and the amount of the stadium that is covered by the roof keeps the field from getting sun. It does not allow
it. It keeps the liquid in. You don't want that.
Now, I will say for this, the NFL announced 4 games in London for next year, 2 at Wembley and 2 at Tottenham Hotspur.
Mm-hmm.
Tottenham Hotspur, in an effort to accommodate the NFL, has actually built a retractable pitch. They have 2 separate fields built in that stadium, one for soccer, which is natural grass, and then underneath
and a turf field.
A synthetic grass field.
Yeah, kind of like what Arizona has done with their fields, how they can move it out and move it in.
Yeah, the difference is when Arizona slides theirs out, it's concrete. This actually, it's like Chuck Norris's chin.
Mm-hmm.
You pull back the field, another field.
Right.
So they are set up well, but I do agree that I don't know how you could have. What you could have done to avoid that, I think the thing to do would have been to look at the NFL schedule and say, all right, 3 consecutive NFL games at Wembley, we're not going to play Tottenham at home this week.
Yeah. Or have the game of the week. That was the game of the week. Spurs City, that was the game of the weekend.
Yeah, and just not have them play that game there on that day. Have them play someplace else.
Right.
I know the anticipation was that probably the stadium would be ready by now. It was not.
Right.
And this needed to be looked at because those field conditions were not up to par. So,
no.
But we got to run. We're up against it. Once again, thanks to you, Stead, for
thanks
joining
to you,
me.
Mike. Absolutely.
Thanks to producer Paul for keeping us on the air. And thanks to the folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle for sponsoring us and allowing us to do our thing, which we so much enjoy. Thanks again. Good night and good luck.
Good night, everybody.